May it please the court.
Ms. Odom, let me ask you just a real quick question because of, it seems to me that the government has already conceded that first point on the attempt at rape. Now, given that, and the concession being that it's not a crime of violence, given that, don't we send this back for redetermination of sentencing? From the start?
That's what we're requesting the court to do, yes, sir.
I mean, it affects both the offense level and
yes.
the criminal history.
Yes.
Now, as I understand it, they have an excellent argument that the
under the gross sexual imposition.
Yeah, sexual imposition, whatever
yes.
that means. That should be reviewed under plain error. And let's assume right now for argument that let's say that is a crime of violence, or that we find under the review that it is.
All right.
It still would have to go back to be resentenced. Is that correct?
That is what I believe should happen in this case. Yes, Your Honor.
I'm really asking the United States Attorney to comment.
I was going to say, that's what's called a friendly question. Let me say that you're not quite there with me, okay?
All right.
So why don't
okay.
you start on the premise that maybe you got to sell somebody?
All right. Okay.
Well, and actually, I mean, is that so? Because if the gross sexual misconduct would support the points, then does it matter whether the attempted rape does or doesn't? Isn't that what the government's really saying, is that we don't have to get to attempted rape because we got gross sexual misconduct?
That is what the government is saying. And what we're saying is that there was an objection below to the crime of violence enhancement. Just as a point of clarification, the first PSR in the district court only listed the rape offense as a qualifying crime of violence. We objected, saying that it was overbroad and that the government hadn't met its burden of proof with regards to the crime of violence enhancement. The addendum and the revised PSR then included both the rape and the gross sexual imposition. We did not file a second objection, but at sentencing, we clearly maintained our position that the government had not proved the crime of violence enhancement. Started with the rape conviction, the court ruled that qualified and did not get to the gross sexual imposition. And so I believe that the district court does need to address the gross sexual imposition offense, particularly in
But, I mean, can't we do that? In other words, can't we say if we conclude gross sexual imposition is a crime of violence, then there's nothing to send back?
Yes, this court certainly can look to other grounds to support a judgment. But I believe that this falls in the category of a case that was described in the United States Supreme Court decision in Dandridge v. Williams, where the Supreme Court, of course, acknowledged that you could look to another reason to support the judgment, but said, when attention has been focused on other issues, or when the court from which a case comes has expressed no views on a controlling question, it may be appropriate to remand the case rather than deal with the merits of that question. And I think that's what this court should do.
I mean, we don't have a ruling really to sink our teeth into with regards to the second, the gross sexual imposition.
That's correct. I do not think that the gross sexual imposition is on plain error. I think that the counsel below clearly objected and maintained its position that the government had not met its burden of proof. Started with a rape conviction, there was no reason for the defense counsel to then address the gross sexual imposition. And I think the district court should address that.
Ms. Odom, but I think implicitly, explicitly, the district court did award 1 point for the latter, the gross sexual imposition,
right.
Awarded 1 point. Now, how do you get around the fact that there was no objection to that?
That is reviewed under plain error. That was missed in the district court below. And the problem with that is that you must have two or more crimes of violence to have the additional criminal history point.
I see what you're saying.
And what's significant in this case is that the guideline criminal history category goes from category 3 to 2 without that one criminal history point. And also keep in mind that on the gross sexual imposition, the record is not as clear as it could be with regards to the, with regards to the conduct that occurred on the gross sexual imposition. We maintain that the documents do not show that Mr. Esqueda Pena explicitly admitted to sexual conduct with a child under the Shepherd-approved documents. There are problems with the indictment and the judgment in this case.
Well, just a minute. Let's talk about that if you want to get into that. It seems to me that it is clear from the judgment, from the Ohio judgment, that it indicates that it is a, what is it, a level three?
A third-degree felony.
Third-degree felony. And at that time, it could only have been a crime, a sexual crime against a minor.
That's true, that the gross sexual imposition statute, which has several prongs, and you look at the punishment aspect of it, does list contact with a child as a third-degree felony. However, under Ohio law, there could be other aggravating factors.
But don't we look at the judgment? I thought, you know, I'm trying to find the judgment here.
Yes, yes.
I thought the judgment explicitly said that this had to, you know, that the this was a class three.
It
and
does.
And the only class three at that time could only have been this offense against a minor
under
the state law.
Under the state law. However, again, there are problems with both the judgment and the indictment in this case. The indictment is essentially, it's not informative. You have four counts in the indictment. He did not plead to count one or count three. They're not relevant or considered by this court. The rape statute is not what he pled to. He pled to a lesser included of attempted rape. You're left with that fourth count, and the judgment says that he pled guilty to count four.
Well, the entry says, to wit, gross sexual imposition, a violation of 2907.05 of the Ohio Revised Code, a felony of the third degree, and was found guilty of said charge. Now,
that's correct.
Just focusing on the gross sexual imposition charge.
Yes.
It seems to me there can be no other conclusion than it was this molestation of a minor.
I disagree, and I think that's why it needs to go back to the district court. I think that you have, that judgment reflects he pled guilty to count four. Then you have a judicial finding that it's gross sexual imposition, third degree. There could be other statutory aggravating factors that could get it to go from a four to a three under other sections of the Ohio state law. And the judgment also has errors in it. It said that it says it's going to punish him from 8 to 15 years on count one. He didn't plead guilty to count one. This court has sent back and remanded cases for the district court to look closer at the documents in cases where the issue was brought before the district court in the first place and considered, in cases such as Bonilla Mongia and Martinez Paramo, where you actually had it argued in the court below, brought up before this court, and it remanded and reversed to take a closer look at the documents. And that's what I think should happen in this case, particularly when we're talking about ambiguities, in the indictment and the judgment. And we're talking about this court making a factual determination on a crime of violence which seriously enhances a sentence. And we have the issue of the criminal history point. And also keep in mind the context in which these issues were briefed. The opening brief by the appellant was briefed that the district court erred in its ruling on the rape, that the rape, attempted rape, qualified as a crime of violence. The issue of gross sexual imposition was addressed in the harmless error analysis and was also addressed for when it goes back for resentencing, there could be no claim that it was waived before the appellate court. You combine that again with the fact of the fourth point, and I think that this should go back to the district court for the court to hear the argument from the parties with the paperwork and look at, because right now all we are looking at is an indictment and a judgment.
But with regards to the gross sexual imposition count, you're not arguing that either the indictment or the judgment is defective, are you?
I am arguing that there are problems with both the indictment and judgment. Yes, I am.
On the gross sexual imposition?
Yes, on gross sexual imposition. On gross sexual imposition, the indictment says that he compelled himself to submit by force.
Oh, wow.
And I know that that's, but it's problematic, and it's also problematic that the judgment cites the wrong thing that he pled to. And we also, this case is interesting, it occurred in 1993, and we are looking at a 1997 judgment. There could be other factors with regards to the length of time that it got there, and I think it should be argued below for the district court to make the factual findings on that. I would also point out that this case is an outlier. We are looking at the 2007 guidelines. This is an older case. He pled at his sentencing was in April of 2008, prior to the new 2008 guidelines that are in effect today. And those guidelines have revised the definition of a forcible sex offense. So we're looking at an older guideline, and Gomez does not foreclose this issue either. Again, we're looking at a rape statute that is broader than the statute that this court en banc addressed in Gomez. And so we're looking at something where what the court considered the sole basis of its enhancement is uncontroverted, doesn't apply. And then this court is now tasked with, should you make the factual findings on the gross sexual imposition? And I maintain the position that these documents are problematic. If there are no other questions, I'll set aside.
Thank you. Ms. Harmon.
Mary Jane Harmon for the United States. May it please the court, good morning. I think it's important to focus on what Judge Crane had in front of him during this, rather than on the one sentence in the sentencing transcript where he says, I find that this, referring to the attempted rape, warrants the enhancement. He had in front of him a PSR, and he adopted the PSR at record 209, a PSR that was very clear in saying that both of these offenses qualified for the enhancement and that both of them qualified for the criminal history points that were attributed to them. That was in the PSR as well. The judge was also looking, sir?
Ms. Harmon, with regards to that, why didn't you argue that the attempted rape was a crime of violence in your brief?
We did not concede it. We simply said the court doesn't have to reach that. It's more problematic. The gross imposition is something that the court below could have found easily because of the Shepard-approved documents the court was looking at, and it was just so clear. Third-degree felony, this guy... The court had to find a factual basis
usually when it's so clear, that's the point you really want to make and hit a home run on, it seems to me.
Well,
there was nothing there. I was just stunned. I frankly was stunned when I read the brief. And the question that I have, if you would answer this, is that have you in effect by not briefing the attempted rape as a crime of violence waived any arguments to that?
That's certainly not what I would like for the court to hold. What I did not concede. We did not say that the government concedes that the attempted rape is not a crime of violence. It is, and I could argue that now. But the court doesn't need to get there because I don't see how it could be any clearer that for that state court judge to have found a factual basis for that third-degree felony of gross imposition, gross sexual imposition, he has to have found that there was sexual contact with that 12-year-old child, with that child under the age of 13, because that's the only way you could violate, you could commit a third-degree felony of gross sexual imposition at that time.
Okay. But do they both have to be crimes of violence to get the extra criminal history point?
They both have to be crimes of violence under 4B
You're saying it's a different crime of
1.2.
violence.
1.2. It's slightly different. This court has held that you can look at what this court has done with crimes of violence under 2L1.1 for the 16-point enhancement. Specifically, for example, in our brief, we cited Velasquez Overa, for example, which was a 2L1.1 case, but at that time, Section 16, which is what Velasquez Overa was referring to, was looking at a crime of violence definition that did include a risk of injury.
Well, if that's the case, then we do have to get there, don't we?
Well,
I mean, we have to get to the point. We have to get to. We have to conclude, legally conclude, under what you've presented, that both are crimes of violence in order to have the 3 plus the 1. And if you take one away, you may, let's assume you take the attempted rape away, and we say that the sexual imposition is the 3, which the district court did not make that decision.
That's correct.
Then you still... You have a different guideline range that you have to contend with, both because of the criminal history and the offense level. This is a very complicated little...
That's true, Your Honor, but as far as the criminal history points, which is what the question was, we get the 16 points on without, because of all the entry and of the state court judge and the indictment, it just could not be clearer. By the way, the district court in this case was also looking at what was with the PSR was the description of the attempted rape statute or attempt statute, the rape statute. He was looking at all of those things in order to make his decision to adopt the PSR, which clearly said both of these offenses warrant the 16. This court doesn't even need to get to attempted rape because it's so clear on gross imposition.
Okay, now, I'm back to the criminal history points. You've conceded that it's not enough for the rape conviction or the attempted rape conviction to simply be a crime of 1 year or more punishment. It has to also be a crime of violence in order to justify the additional point being given for the gross sexual imposition. That's my question.
Because
the two are grouped together to get the 3 points.
That's right.
Right?
That's correct.
And it seems like the guideline itself said add 3 points for each prior sentence of imprisonment exceeding 1 year and 1 month, but then it's the comment that speaks to the crimes of violence.
That's correct.
Is that a disparity between the comment and the guideline?
No.
No. So you agree we have to find two crimes of violence to get to that extra point.
Two crimes of violence under
4B1.2. Under 4B, all right. I understand that. Now, the problem that I have is if we apply Turner to this situation and say when you plead to a lesser included offense, then we can't look at the indictment to pare it down, then we're back to an attempted crime that could have involved, and I put in quotes, merely an assent in fact, but not consent because of impaired capacity or something of that nature. And so we're back into that whole line of
that,
cases.
I'd really like to address that issue,
okay.
the attempt. Under Ohio law, the statute, and by the way, the district court judge was looking at this. This was with the PSR. Simply says, no person, purposely or knowingly, and when purpose or knowledge is sufficient, sufficient culpability for the commission of the offense, shall engage in conduct which, if successful, would constitute or result in the offense. Count 2 was not dismissed. It's the conduct alleged in count 2 that he pled to attempting to
commit. So you're saying that this is an exception to Turner. We can use the indictment to pare down.
In this particular case, because of the way this attempt statute works, he's pleading to having attempting to have sexual vaginal intercourse with a person named Irma. In the gross sexual imposition statute or charge, it is established that he pled guilty to the fact that Irma was 12 years old. So we've got his attempting to have sexual conduct with a minor. That didn't change. The only thing, the only prong, two prongs that are alleged in the rape attempt, attempted rape, in the rape charge, are the two prongs, either one of which is going to make the meet the requirements of the 16 level enhancement.
I think if we can use the indictment to pare down, that you're in much better shape than if you can't. That's my point. So
it's an attempted conduct and that would be a crime. There's no way.
What case can we look at to give us this exception to Turner?
I can't answer that, Judge.
Esquita Pena. Is this the case you're trying to make?
That's right.
Okay.
We're hoping for that. Because what was briefed by Esquita, of course, was the problem was with the second, the 1 point for the gross imposition. And there's no doubt that gross imposition, a third degree felony, is the sexual abuse of a minor. No doubt of that. Based on everything, remember that this court was, the district court was looking at. You send it back, he's going to be looking at the same things he was looking at before, which is very clear. The copies of how the statutes read and Ohio statutes read, copies of the indictment, copy of judgment. And remember, what Esqueda is arguing is problematic or ambiguous in the statute is not the part of the statute that's at issue here. We're not talking about whether it was, compelled by force or whether Esqueda. I mean, it's an absurd argument, as the government wrote, to say that it's clearly a typo. But we don't even need to go there because it's the first part of the statute. It's a third-degree felony because she's 12 years old, not because she was compelled by force. She's 12 years old, and that's what he pled to because that's the only thing that was a third-degree felony in 1997. So based on all that, we don't believe that the government has conceded on the attempted rape charge, but we don't believe the court needs to go there because we've got 16 points. Clearly, this court doesn't have to do any major bending and to find that. Judge Crane already did that. That's what he was looking at. Yes, under the at the sentencing hearing, all he did when Escada's lawyer said, we nonetheless believe since it's really was eventually a lesser included offense of the indictment, talking about the attempted rape, that there's no reference to the indictment itself and the statute is overly broad, even though, by the way, the indictment itself clearly alleged two of the four ways of committing that rape statute, clearly alleged two of those ways, either one of which works, the 16-level enhancement.
Ms. Harmon, I think that makes perfect sense with regards to the offense level, okay? But if you get to the criminal history, problematic, isn't it?
If I might, just for a minute, for
the
criminal history points, we're looking at the otherwise clause in 4B1.2. Otherwise involves the conviction. Otherwise involves conduct that presents a serious potential risk of physical injury to another. Both of the counts of conviction involve sexual conduct with a minor, and this court has said
no. That's true.
Sorry.
No, I think that's absolutely correct.
That's right.
This court has said that this sexual conduct with a minor, contact with a minor, involves serious potential risk of physical injury to the child. The end.
But I thought that 201.2. where you go the 3 points and then the separate 1 point. If you only have one crime of violence, then see, I'm still hung up on the fact that you just did not, as far as criminal history points, you may be right on the first point on the offense level, but vis-a-vis criminal history points, you did not argue the first count as a crime of violence. Now, I understand what you're saying, that it's a child, and both the attempted rape and the sexual imposition come into play in the crime of violence under the 4B1 point, whatever, 1B1
right, because they both present a substantial risk to physical injury.
Okay.
But again, recall that what the government was responding to on that second issue was the appellant saying, arguably, attempted rape, that gets the 3 points. The problem is the 1 point for gross sexual imposition. That's what the government was responding to, because that was what their argument was. That's a little different from the government saying with respect to the first issue, the court doesn't need to get there. Okay?
Okay.
If there's nothing further.
Thank you. Ms. Odom?
I'd like to start with the criminal history points, if I may. This is a quick point of clarification. On appellant's brief, we first argued that the rape offense did not qualify under Section 4B1.2. And out of abundance of caution, we also pointed out that the gross sexual imposition did not qualify. But our first point in the opening brief was that the rape offense did not qualify. And we specifically pointed out that under this court's precedent, you look to the entire statute of conviction when someone pleads to a lesser included offense. And that is under Turner. And under Ohio case law, the case is White v. Maxwell, 174 Ohio Supreme Court, 186. It states that it is not necessary that each lesser-included offense of a crime be set forth in the indictment when someone pleads to a lesser-included indictment. The rape...
But isn't that... I mean, that's a little bit different from saying that when you plead guilty to an attempt... in an indictment that charged, you know, A1, let's say, if there's A1 through 4 that could have been charged, and it charged A1, and you say, I attempted to do A1, why isn't that sufficiently pared down?
It's not. We don't have what he pled to. If we had the superseding indictment on the lesser included, then the court could do that. But
your opponent's saying
they
don't do that in Ohio. They say, I attempted to do A1, and you don't have to re-indict.
That's not necessarily true. The Ohio case law is full of cases in which they say even with an attempt, you're pleading to a lesser. They could have pled to a lesser included attempted battery under the rape charge. It could be an attempted battery. You do not know what he pled to. We do not have what he pled to in the record. And it's quite clear on rape, lesser-included offenses include attempted battery. It includes attempted rape. And without what he pled to, you look at the complete statute of conviction.
And that's what this case you gave us a cite for says?
Yes, it does say that you do not necessarily have to have all the elements in the indictment when someone pleads to a lesser-included offense.
But to me, that's a different question, whether you have to have all of the elements. Is different from whether if we know the guy was charged with subpart 1, and he pleads attempt to subpart 1, why that isn't enough? That's different from saying it has to be in the indictment that he also attempted.
It says that you can, it's not necessary to plead to each lesser-included offense, not all the elements, each lesser-included offense. So it could
Okay, and I think that's separate. That's the procedure of indictment. Has the guy been given notice of what he's charged with? That's what an indictment's all about. I understand that. I don't think that answers the question, though, of when somebody comes in and pleads guilty to an attempt in Ohio, are they pleading guilty to the attempt to do what's in the indictment or some other thing that's under this vast rubric of rape?
Right. And I am saying without the pleading documents, you are speculating that he specifically pled to the indictment. That's what we're saying. You do not have enough on this record to know for sure that he pled to what's in that indictment. And I think it's very clear. I also think that to be quite clear, under this court's decision in Charles, it says if from the face of the indictment the crime charge presents a serious potential risk of injury, and now I'm talking about, again, under Section 4B1.2, that's what you look at from the face of the indictment. And under this court's precedent, under Turner, we do not look to this indictment on the rape conviction. And so I'm saying from this indictment, because you have to look at the entire offense of rape, it does not show the potential risk of injury. That's the problem with this case. That's why
even,
I think
even
it should
if
go
it's,
back.
Even if it's proven that it's a minor?
If they prove below that what he pled to were...
I mean, if it was an adult, it might be a little bit different, but
that's
if,
correct.
If she was 12 years, I mean, 13 years old, I guess it was, or 12 years old, I guess.
That's, I mean, correct. That's correct. If we're, that's
you're
what
saying
I'm
that that
about.
Doesn't come under the 4B1.1?
Yes, it would. It would come under the 4B1.1 if we had an indictment to look to.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Was there any other victim listed in the indictment besides this young 12-year-old?
No. But again, as I was talking about earlier with the problems with the
indictment. So if you're indicted for the contact with the 12-year-old, then you can come in and plead guilty to some other lady that was at some bar somewhere that you slipped something in her drink, and then that's fine under Ohio law? That's what you're saying?
That
no.
doesn't sound right.
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying...
Seems like we're getting pretty far afield from you don't have to list every lesser included offense.
What I'm saying is, on this record, without the indictment before us, it opens it up. We look to the entire statute of conviction. Just as in Gomez, it was not clear what he pled to, which prong he pled to, and you looked at the entire statute of conviction.
Now, but you've got to posit a fake victim to get to your point, because there's only one victim listed, and we know she's under 13.
Right, but you also have problems with the document. You also have that, and I know this is a typographical error, but it says that he compelled himself. These documents are problematic. And I don't think that the court should make a factual finding. I think it should be the district court making a decision on the gross sexual imposition.